Hey there, Freedom Fighters. My name is Andrew Warner. I'm the founder of Mixergy, where I interview entrepreneurs who are ambitious for an audience of entrepreneurs who are also ambitious, who want to do things, who want to build things, who want to leave a mark on the world. And joining me today is a woman. Hey, interesting side note. I get a lot of requests from female listeners who want me to feature more women, and it's on me. I need to keep doing a better job of getting more women entrepreneurs here. But I should also say that a lot of times when I get a female entrepreneur on, they don't want to be identified as a female entrepreneur, which I think is, I get it, totally sensible, but it's disappointing for my audience of female entrepreneurs who are looking for somebody who they could relate to, someone who's like them. Joining me today is a woman who one of the first things I asked her was, how do I make this interview a win for you? She said, look, I'm a female entrepreneur. If I could inspire somebody else who's a woman like I am, who's out there listening, I'd love it. I go, this is great. And then I have to tell you, if you're not a woman, she's freaking inspiring too. This is a woman who's taking on merchant processing. How many? The merchant processing is a business that's been around for years. People have been at it with deep pockets. She gets into this business, brand new model. She says, hey, you know what? All these companies out there, whenever they want to process credit cards, what they have to do is sign up with a merchant processing company. That's what they're called, right? The category is called merchant processing?
That's correct.
And I never understood how this worked. I just knew I needed it. And then they were going to take some magical fees and I couldn't figure out what it was. Then I hired somebody, a finance person, who went through all the documentation to help me understand it. And what we realized was every time we accepted a credit card, the price was different. If somebody used a Chase Sapphire card, Chase has some percentage that we'd have to pay. If somebody then used, say, a Chase Freedom card, that percentage might be different. If they use a Citibank card, that percentage that that credit card charged was different. All those fees for us to process their credit cards. And in addition to it, the merchant processing company that we worked with would charge a fee too. And this whole thing was so opaque and so mysterious. And the weird thing was, if we just called up the companies that we worked with and said, can you give us a discount? Often they would instantly say, oh yeah, there's a discount here, which made me feel like a fool because what they're doing is just charging as much as possible until they get caught. Anyway, yeah. Right. You've seen that. Sunira, I'm going to say this. Anyone who's listening to us, if they don't take anything away from this, let me introduce today's guest. I've been so rude. She's been so kind and I've been just rude. Her name is Sunira Madani.
Hey, everyone. She's the founder of... waiting for you to say my name so I can say hi. Hello.
The company is Fat Merchant. What they do is credit card processing with a flat monthly fee. We're going to talk to her about how she bootstrapped it, how getting started, since she had very little money, was possible because she entered entrepreneur competitions. She raised money that way. She then did so well that she got investment money and she grew the business really big. We can do it thanks to two phenomenal sponsors. The first will host your website, right? It's called HostGator. I'll tell you about that. And the second is a podcast that I'm going to urge you to listen. It's called Traffic Secrets by ClickFunnels. Sunira, how many people at the company now?
We have 110 people at the company, but I'd love to say hi to the audience. I've been like super quiet for the first 5 minutes, but it is such an honor to be here today, Andrew. I love what you're sharing, and especially when you first talked about having more female entrepreneurs speak up and even identify as female entrepreneur. When you asked me that, it was second nature to me. Like, I am a female entrepreneur and I want to inspire other women as well as just other entrepreneurs to take a chance and go follow their dreams. My background, I should have never been an entrepreneur. I did not go to MBA school, CEO school, I like to call it. I was super risk averse. I come from an immigrant family of entrepreneurs and where entrepreneurship was never sexy. It was a necessity. That was the only way that my family could make a means to an end was through entrepreneurship. And so education was a huge emphasis for me growing up so that I could kind of get out of the entrepreneurial rut. And
yeah,
so
you told I'm sorry to interrupt, but you told our producer that your family had done so many different businesses. Where'd you come from and what kind of businesses did they run?
Yeah. So my parents immigrated separately from Karachi, Pakistan. So I am a Pakistani descent. I was born in the US, but definitely around like that culture. And they had every type of business under the sun, convenience stores, pizza shops, restaurants. At one point, my dad had a nightclub. We had a marketing company. I mean, he was a serial entrepreneur and I went to 10 different schools in 12 years. And so for me, I never had entrepreneurship. I kind of grew up around it. And so that was kind of one of the reasons why I felt I had to go get a corporate, go down the corporate route. I didn't want to bring the stress home of entrepreneurship. So I kind of had it from a different lens, but definitely it's in the blood. I grew up around business. I grew up from a very young age working in all of the businesses as well. And so that's kind of like where my background of entrepreneurship does come from.
It seems like if they're running all these companies and it's stressful, was it working out? It seems like it maybe wasn't.
It was, we definitely grew up, we didn't grow up, I don't want to say I grew up poor by any means. I mean, I was in a middle class income family, and we, you know, I grew up in a really stable environment in that sense. But I think for my parents, it was always this pursuit of what was next, and they never really finished things through. So it was here, let's build this business. And then now there's this next opportunity and this next opportunity. And so for me, this has kind of been the opposite of why I have, like, I've been in Orlando now for over 15 years. So once this was like my final move, I ended up going to college at University of Florida, got a degree in finance.
Let's go back to your parents. Give me an example of a business that they started that if they would have stuck with it instead of jumping to the next one, might have been more exciting, might have been better.
Yeah, I think, you know, they did really well in a marketing agency where, you know, pop-up ads used to be the thing in the early 2000s. And that was the pay-per-click way of advertising. And so, you know, my dad had invested in a marketing agency that was really focused on pay-per-click advertising, and they did really well. And that was something that I think would have carried through. I think that there would have been new innovations that came through in agency advertising. But when that died, their company kind of died.
What do you mean? What died about it? Pop-ups as a medium died. And instead of iterating to the next alternative pay-per-click medium, they just said, let's move on to another business.
Let's move on to the next opportunity. Yeah. So, and I don't want to take I've learned so much from, you know, kind of seeing all of this. And I have had so many wonderful memories around these businesses. So I'm not trying to paint it in like a horrible lens by any means, just different. I just grew up around a lot. And it came with the good, bad, and the ugly. And with that, I ended up going to a good university, got a stable degree, and decided not to pursue finance just because it was boring. And I had a couple of different corporate positions and ended up working for a payment processing company, which I thought would be super exciting. And quickly, like you were talking about, Andrew, in 6 months, I learned that it was the most non-transparent industry that you can work for. And it was really about nickel and diming the customers. It was really a poor customer experience, but no one was changing it.
The example that I gave was you call them up and they say, oh yeah, of course we've got a lower rate, and boom, you get it back, right?
Exactly. Why can everybody give you a lower and lower and lower rate? It's because everybody has high margins that they're just gouging customers on. And even if they
the margin? Give me an example of a high margin that they were charging typically.
It was so variable. That's what's so crazy about the industry is that it was, and I would say it's getting better now, but this is in the 2010s and early 2010s I'm talking about. I mean, they're making anywhere from 1-3% off of these transactions.
So every $100 that I charge, in addition to what I'm paying Visa or MasterCard, or I guess Chase, I should say, bank through Visa or MasterCard. In addition to that, they're also getting $1 to $3 of my sales.
Yes. On the bottom line. Right. And so that quickly adds up, like very, very quickly. And it ended up. So that's how the industry just kind of has always been. The way that exactly how you described it is you got to pay the Visa MasterCard fees, right? You got to pay the card brand fees. And that's kind of how we as consumers, we love our rewards credit cards, and that's never going to go away. Whatever form that looks like, we want to be incentivized by where we spend our money, but somebody has to pay for it.
And so the way it works is, if I get a Chase Sapphire card where I get miles every time I buy something, what happens is Chase will charge the merchant extra for that, to process that credit card, just so they can give me the miles. Now, if I use my other credit card that has no miles, no points, no nothing, Chase charges the merchant a little bit less, right?
That's correct.
Got it.
Okay. But there's a cost. There's a cost component to it. But what we found, and this is why Fat Merchant is so unique, is there is an additional there's a bunch of hands that it goes through by the time that the merchant ends up paying for it. And what we do at Fat Merchant is open up the direct cost. That's known as interchange. So we open it up to every business ever and say, hey, we'll just give you the direct cost. And instead of charging variable percentage markups on how much or less your business does, we're just going to charge you a flat monthly subscription. And so this idea was extremely novel. This is 2013. I'm stuck in a snowstorm in Texas, which is super reminiscent now that I've been stuck at home in COVID. Mm-hmm. And I think this is where like the best innovation happens actually. So I can't wait to talk to you about what's happening at Fat Merchant in COVID. But 2013, I'm stuck in Dallas, Texas. This is where my family is. And I'm trying to reroute my subscription boxes. And this is pre-subscription economy. I like to call myself an elder millennial. I was like obsessed with every subscription that I could get my hands on. And now I'm in the payment industry for about a year. And I already, know that cost is the same for every provider. So it doesn't matter if you're Chase, Square, PayPal, any of the banks. Visa, MasterCard, Discover set the rates every year. But how payment processor companies make money is that they charge their own percentages. So I'm like, why isn't anybody doing a subscription and payments where it's flat, it's transparent, it's so easy to understand? Yeah, our margins are going to be less, but we're going to be able to scale that so quickly. So first thing as any entrepreneur does when they have their business ideas, go to the Google Academy online and start searching for what's out there. And I was like, wait, how is there nobody doing a subscription? I can't be the first person to come up with this. And so I put together probably the best business plan I have ever come up with because it's very successful now. But I put together this amazing plan. And it wasn't for myself. I wanted to take it back to my company. So I was working for a processor, as I told you. And I can't disclose the name of the processor, but I took this back to them and said, hey, I think this is going to be a fantastic go-to-market angle. This is what we should do. And we're going to remove contracts. Oh, we're going to remove all of the bullshit fees that we're charging them. We're just going to charge them this flat fee and it's going to scale.
You wanted the company you worked for to jump on this idea.
Yeah, I want.
Why
I did
give
not
it to them?
Because Andrew, I was 26 years old. I had no money in my bank account. I had never started a company. I told you I was super risk averse. I did not want to become an entrepreneur. I just thought this was I wanted to solve a problem. And that's what I was so focused on. In my mind, it was never about me or me wanting to solve it. I wanted or me wanting to benefit from it. It was really about I'm already at a place where I have the resources around me to really go scale it. So instead of starting over, let's just go make this product work. And so that was kind of the lens that I was viewing it from. But also this is where the female part kind of comes in of my story is I think just as women, sometimes we don't even put ourselves in those positions where we think naturally to be like, I can go do this. There is definitely a fear factor, a confidence factor, there's not people doing it factor. I didn't have anybody to look up to say, you should definitely go do this thing for yourself. I was my last choice. So what ended up happening, Andrew, is that I pitched the idea. I got rejected. I knew that I didn't want to work for that company anymore, but I knew that this had I became super obsessed with wanting to launch this. So I took it to about 12 different processors and investors. I got shot down every single time until I was pretty much left with being my last resort. And I was like, okay, now that everyone has pretty much said no to me, I still want to see this through. I'm going to go out to do it. And so that's where the journey started.
Let me see if I can get a job somewhere where they could help me implement this.
Yeah, it was a hybrid. It was an entrepreneurial role, you could per se, is what I was trying to. I knew that this business model would work. I knew I needed resources around it, so I wasn't trying to be the it wasn't coming at it from this venture backed. I didn't even go to venture investors where I'm like, here, go give me money. I'm gonna go run it. It was more around, hey, you are a successful processing company. You're a successful bank. This is how this could fit here. And also you have to remember, it's not like opening up a payments company is like opening up like a cupcake shop down the road. So there's a lot of regulation. There's a lot of things that go into starting a financial services company, as well as from a regulatory compliance standpoint, running housing transactions. I had to get a sponsor bank. I had to get a Visa MasterCard card approval. I mean, there's a lot that goes into it. And so it's definitely a dollar investment, time investment. Also, it was a lot of unknown that I didn't have that experience to go do that. And so at that time, you know, now looking back, I probably should have skipped that whole first 6 months of that phase, but you kind of go through, that was the part of the journey for me to realize that, you know, I can go do this. And I gave myself 6 months. I had $20,000 in the bank account that I had saved up, and I got a little bit of money from friends and family. And it was like, here you go. And I went out to go pitch Fat Merchant, which was the first flat subscription processing company.
And you started pitching it to who? From what I understand, yeah. Visa was one of the first partners. Is that right?
Yes, I was able to get all of the card brands on board, but I needed, I was able to get my BIN sponsor. I got all of the regulatory stuff done. I think the exciting part was that, like, that was the hard part, and I was able to do that.
What's involved in that? I imagine it's just a checklist of different things that you need to do in order to be up and running as a merchant, right? It's been done so many times already, right? It's a solved problem. You just needed to go through. Can you describe what goes into this?
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to bore the audience with like details about like compliance standpoints, but you pretty much have to get a sponsor bank. You have to be able to put transactions and house transactions somewhere. Somebody has to clear the money, and it has to be a bank that has to do it. And so at the end of the day, you can't just get up and be like, oh, I'm going to go sell processing. There's a process you have to go through. You have to get a sponsorship. It's definitely, it was a lot tighter to just start a company. I could do it under the umbrella of other companies, which I didn't want to do, which was definitely an option. But it took about 6 months to get all my ducks in a row. Once I had my licenses, which was March of 2014, I will never forget that day when I got my go that everything is done. I actually went, I signed up for a business plan competition. So
wait, before give me just a flavor of what's involved in creating a merchant processing company. What are some of the things on that checklist?
Yeah, money. So I have to be able to hold transactions. And if like fraud happens, I have to be able to do that.
A balance sheet with enough money that you can, sustain the amount of charges that you get?
Yes. So again, I'm trying to like get out of the details here on like what that looks like, but it's a lot of shit. That's all, like, what I'm trying to get to. So in terms of fraud, in terms of compliance, in terms of tools, in terms of one, I keep mentioning, you got to have a bank sponsorship. That was a huge component of it. A bank is not going to give you a sponsorship. So I had to fucking go pitch everywhere to say, hey, here's why you should run these transactions and why this is going to be a profitable business for the bank. And so that was part of the details.
How did you know what needed to go into it? How did you get that checklist of things that you needed to do in order to process credit cards?
Google University.
Really? You just would Google and then you put together a list. There's not a checklist already out there.
No, I mean, there's not. I had to find my way is like what I can, like, I feel like I'm not giving you what you're looking for right now here in those details, but I figured it out. Like, it took 6 months of me figuring it out, talking to people, the right mentors, going from bank to bank, getting the bank sponsorships, talking to my old processors. So there was those details that went into getting things up and running.
Let me take a moment to talk about my first sponsor, and then we'll get back into the story. My first sponsor is a company called HostGator. It's for hosting websites. You know, the other day I had my kids asking me questions about insects that I didn't know the answers to. So I finally went on Twitter right there in their bedroom at like 7, it must have been 7:45 or late at night while I was getting them ready for bed. And I said, does anyone know an entomologist who would just zoom in with my 3-year-old and my 5-year-old and answer their questions? And somebody said, yeah, here's an entomologist who's actually working at the zoo, but the zoo is closed right now, so he'll do it. And Drew from the zoo said, sure. He got on Zoom with my kids. He actually allowed me to bring some of my kids' friends on, and he answered all their questions. And it was so riveting because he had a snake in his house. He had a chameleon in his house. He brought him on. He answered all their questions, and he showed his animals. And it was so good. I said, is there anything that you want? Once we were done, I said, can I help you with anything? And he said, well, I'm out of the zoo. There's nothing for me to do right now. I said, you're so good at this. You should do this professionally in charge. He goes, I would love to do that. I said, would it help if I just started a website for you where you could sell tickets? He said, oh yeah, that would be great. So I went to HostGator, hostgator.com/Mixergy, because I wanted a discount. And within minutes, I had a WordPress website up and running for him. I actually recorded a video with clips of him talking to my kids to show what he was about. And I said, if anyone wants, here's how much it would cost to get a ticket. We sold 7 tickets very quickly. And when I showed him the website and the fact that he had tickets sold, he was so excited. He showed it to his mom. I know he showed it to his mom because his mom came on the website and kind of added her name to the mailing list. And all within a few minutes. Now he's got a little side hustle that he can keep on running even after the zoo opens up after the COVID lockdown. The point is, it's so much easier now to take an idea and instead of sketching it out and thinking, should I do it, should I not, just put it into WordPress on HostGator or put it into any number of different platforms that they have on HostGator. HostGator is incredibly inexpensive, super quick, like every click had been thought out to make it easy for me to get started. And it just works. So if you're out there and you're looking to start a business, go to hostgator.com/Mixergy. When I use that URL, I got a super low rate and they made it really easy for me. And if you hate your hosting company or you're thinking, hey, you know what? This post-COVID world is the time when I need to cut costs. Go to hostgator.com/Mixergy. They will migrate your website for you and give you a lower cost. hostgator.com/Mixergy. All right. You had this business up and running. You were starting to say that you entered business competitions. What happened? Tell me about that.
Yeah. So I was just trying to get on any platform that I could to talk about the subscription style processing solution. And so I had ended up, remember the business plan that I was telling you about? I ended up putting this business plan into a business plan competition. It was actually the National Association of Women Business Owners. NABO is like a big chapter. And I put in my business plan there and it ended up getting selected. I went through the whole pitch competition and then won first place. And I took home one of those giant checks. And that I think my first place check was $7,500. And I was like, great. I not only did I got to get up, I got money for the company, but I got to actually pitch to other investors and get in front of an audience of customers and people that have friends. And so I ended up getting business out of this competition. I'm like, well, that was a pretty good use of my time. Let me try it again. Uh-huh. And so I applied to another competition. This one was like a venture competition. And then we applied to another one. And literally in our first year, we took home about $200,000 in prize competition money. We would like literally show up, win first place at these competitions. I've taken home check sizes as big as $100,000.
And you'd get customers because other people who were listening were running new businesses.
And that's exactly how we got our first investment too. So I pitched at Rollins Venture Plan Competition, which is a university here in Orlando. And they have a venture plan competition where they're all local venture companies come to watch these really high selected pitches. And there's a whole process that goes, you know, through selecting the companies. And then they get us ready to go pitch to investors. It's pretty much like Shark Tank in real life.
Yeah.
And now there's so many of these, but there was so much opportunity in just getting up to present in front of these. And that competition, we ended up winning in 2014. And it was our first, it was like $25,000 was the check size, but it came with a $25,000 investment from a local fund, a local angel group fund. And that is kind of where I got our initial invest, like the local investor community excited and did a seed round for about $850,000 was our seed round coming out of that year. And so that was kind of the initial funding that we needed to really scale and get started on growing Fat Merchant.
How long did you go before you raised money, investment money, not prize money?
Yeah, it was about a year. So it was about 1 year until we ended up taking home our seed round. And then to date, we've raised $20 million in venture capital.
And how big was the company revenue-wise in that first year?
Yeah, so we were actually, what was our run rate? God, I think we were doing about $20,000 in MRR per month. So we had revenue.
$20,000 in monthly recurring revenue. Yeah. That means the subscription fees that people are paying you and not, that doesn't include the percent that you're giving the credit card companies, right?
No, because that's direct pass through. So mm-hmm. we always pass through the direct cost. Where we make our money is on the subscription. Obviously there's margin there, but we're a software company. So it's pretty high margin on the software side. And so I'm just doing our run rate here. But that's literally where we were in 2014. We did 5 million in payments our first year. So through our systems, we are processing 5 million in payments. And we just 5 years later, we crossed 5 billion in processing.
That's when? Last year, 2019, you were 5 billion. And then what about your revenue? How much is your revenue from that? Because you don't get a percentage of it.
We do not get a percentage of it. There are components to it, you know, that we do earn some dollars on, but it's still it's not just a vanity metric from a billion standpoint. We are one of the largest merchant acquirers online, and our technology is now being used through, and we can get into that. But the company has evolved quite tremendously. So where we were at that 5 million mark from a processing standpoint, we were direct to customer. And the way that our customers found us was online. And so that was also really novel in our industry at that time, where everybody was still feet on the street. You were going directly to the banks to get your processing. You would open up a business account. That's where it was, your processor was attached to it.
When was this?
This is 2014. Mm-hmm.
It's not 2014, people are still going back to their bank?
Still today, literally, we were one of the first pioneers online from a top merchant acquirer standpoint. We are literally the top five merchant acquirer today in the US from a digital standpoint.
You know what? I wonder if I'm just so disconnected from the real world because I work online that I forget that people operate differently. You're nodding. I'll tell you why. I went to open up a new Chase account because I just wasn't happy with Citibank, which I happened to be with for years. They say, you know, we can process your credit cards. And I said, who's doing this? Who's going to stick with Chase to process credit cards? This just looks like a dummy operation. They don't even understand technology. And you're telling me most people do that? Most businesses will sign up with their bank?
Yes. And so what's crazy is that at this time, so Square and Stripe are coming to market at this time as well. So there's a couple of players emerging from a true technology standpoint, but truly the banks really controlled most of the market share. So processors and banks, and still today. So what is really interesting, the shift is happening, but there are hundreds of thousands of small businesses in the US, and they are still, they're now coming online, but it wasn't that case in 2014. So when we first came online, you know, for me, honestly, it wasn't because I was even trying to be novel. This is like where this just happened because I couldn't afford to hire salespeople.
I want to get into your sales process in a moment because I think the first sales were just as innovative and interesting to me as the latter are. But what is your revenue today? Like, what's your commission?
Yeah, I can't share.
Give me a ballpark. Give me a sense of how big you are.
Yeah, so we are 20 plus million.
20 plus million comes to you, and we're talking subscription fee of $99 a month or $199 a month, depending on where the businesses are, plus a per transaction fee. If I'm right, it's 8 cents per transaction if they're under $500,000 in sales, 6 cents per transaction if they're over $500,000 in sales. Do I have that right?
Yeah. So it's based on, it just depends on how big your business is, but we don't process. So you have to be at least $100,000 in processing volume to come to Fat Merchant. We just don't play for the micro merchants. Our solution just doesn't, add enough value for you. And so our like range of businesses is between that like $500,000 in revenue to $20 million in revenue. That's our sweet spot. Ideal customer that we serve. Okay. And so, and the subscription tiers as like it goes, you know, based on how much volume you process. So the 99 and the 199 is based on, I believe it's like less than 2 million, 2 to 3 million in processing revenue. So if you process higher, then the subscription goes up. But yeah, so we are roughly in the 20s from a ARR standpoint, but we are growing. We've been on Inc's fastest growing companies now for the last 2 years. Last year we were 217 on Inc 5000. And so we just got US World Report this year put Fat Merchant as the number one processor for neck to neck with Square being for micro merchant, and for anything over $100,000, it was Fat Merchant.
Why'd you call it Fat Merchant? I feel like it's more like lean merchant, you know, like you're cutting out so much. Why'd you come up with that name?
We're cutting out the fat. So that's kind of where it premised, came from. But it was really on, it's a fun story. So I started writing down this, I can go back to the moment, was everything that I wanted to be as a company. I've worked for several processors. I've worked for several organizations. And I was like, these are all the things that we want to be. And I started writing these words on the whiteboard, and it was fast, came out. Affordable came out. Transaction technology. So it was actually an acronym, but it was just, oh, we should call ourselves Fat Merchant. We're going to make their wallets fat. We're going to, you know, take out the fat. And it just became this really fun marketing kind of play, I guess. And so we're like, let's just make that the LLC. Like, let's just go book, you know, and it was available on, you know, GoDaddy. And so I ended up buying the domain, thinking that I'm going to change it later. So that was the plan. It was not the plan to keep it Fat Merchant. And then when it just, we never got around to it. And then when I started talking about Fat Merchant, everyone's like, what is that? What? And it just kind of stuck. And what's really incredible is when I go speak at like major national conferences, like Money 2020, and I'm sitting with like all of these payment executives, like everybody loves Fat Merchant because it's so unique in our space. And honestly, it's our culture as well. So I think not only were we disruptive from what payment processing looked like, Fat Merchant really just is, our culture is also, just so fun and energetic.
What
and
about
just
this? It does feel like a looser name than some of the other merchant companies. Yeah. For some reason, a lot of them have acronyms. And anyway, why two T's? You own Fat Merchant with one T.com, fatmerchant.com. Why do you need the two T's?
Well, that's what I was saying. Initially, it was an acronym. It was Fast Affordable Transaction Technology.
Why did you stick with that now?
We never changed it. We never looked back. And it was unique in a sense. I didn't want it to be just, it wasn't supposed to be just about like literally the term fat. And so we named it Fat Merchant with two T's, FATTmerchant.com. And this is what, this has been our company.
The first customers came from you, in addition to winning competitions, going out to store owners. Am I right? You walking door to door?
Oh yeah. So I used to walk, I've been in sales pretty practically my whole life. And when I talk about, this is going to age me. I was literally in field sales. So when field sales, I think there's probably some industries that field sales still exist. But, when I was first launching the company, I needed to go get customers and we started to build a website. We started to put money online, but I literally also would show up plaza to plaza and go talk to business owners about their pain points on what were their frustrations with processing. So I'd like show up and ask them like how I can help and kind of act as a consultant. And not for money, like literally to understand what their pain points were and how we can make it better. And then I would offer them free processing, like literally free processing for them to become a beta of Fat Merchant. And I would tell them like, put our solution next. You don't have to change your solution. So, cause why would anybody want to trust this brand new company? But I needed to get customers into the door to prove my MVP that this was going to scale. And so I would literally give away the solution for them to run transactions on our terminals. And that is how we probably got our first 100 customers was through those competition wins, meeting people through networking, literally going door to door, signing up my like uncle and dad and his friend and all like our neighbors. And that was like the initial start of the company. And now we have, 6,000 customers, nationwide. We're onboarding roughly 400 to 500 net new businesses per month. So the velocity of our growth now, is pretty, pretty massive. And not only from that, we're also growing through our partners. So something that changed for us in 2 years ago, I was really protective of, and this is for any founder out there listening, from a software company standpoint, I was really protective of our API, of what we've built from a technology standpoint. So yes, Fat Merchant was a subscription-based processor, but that wasn't our value add. Our value add was transparency there, but it was really a great user experience across the board. It wasn't just user experience on price. Something that we also identified was that the payment products that the customers were using were really shitty. And there was awesome companies doing things, great things from a retail perspective like Square. There was awesome companies doing things from an API perspective like Stripe, but nobody was really doing anything for like a card not present environment, like a virtual terminal. So where you could do invoicing, recurring billing, and kind of tying in all of the solutions that a business needs to accept payments. And even in 2020, a small business owner has to go to 4 different places to get their merchant needs. So they have a mobile processor, they have an online shopping cart, they have a retail store, they have online invoicing, but nothing talks to each other. And so
you can't just get Stripe because Stripe will only do credit card processing. They won't do invoicing. They do subscriptions though, but they won't have the form to get somebody to sign up to a subscription, right?
Yes. And they're great at their one, and you have to almost be a developer to understand Stripe's documentation, right? And to be able to implement it. For the small business owner, that's really difficult.
Can't they just use whatever software they want, whatever shopping cart they want? Then the shopping cart says, hit this link, you'll go to Stripe. Stripe will give you a code or will automatically take it and then put it into our software. That's it, you're done.
Yeah, so that's only on the online e-commerce side, right? So there's that same customer may also need a retail solution, but the retail solution is not talking to Stripe solution. Right. And okay. Then the invoicing solution is not talking to Square solution. And so there's what I'm trying to say is that there's business owners now need to take payments in a multitude of ways. There hasn't been a way for a business owner to consolidate all the which ways they take a transaction into a single platform. And that's what our platform does. We let the customer choose however they want to pay, whatever channel of means of payments that you guys want to take. You can use those channels. We will pull in those transactional data into a single house. And so you can view all your analytics, view your transactions. So for us, it was really about the user experience from not only from a transparency on a price perspective, but also from a customer product perspective, as well as from a customer experience perspective.
Meaning if somebody's selling necklaces in person at some live event, but also on their online store, they want to be able to see all the credit card information in one dashboard, be able to give people refunds regardless of where they came in from the same place, have the same experience. And that's what you want to do.
Yes. All right, we want to consolidate. Yeah.
Let me talk about my second sponsor and then we'll get back into it. My second sponsor is Russell Brunson. He is the founder of ClickFunnels. Everyone knows him as the company that created landing pages. He's got a podcast called Traffic Secrets, where he breaks down the secrets that he has learned as somebody who's grown his business to over $100 million in sales and also helped businesses like mine get more traffic and convert that traffic into customers. His podcast is all about different secrets, different techniques, different ways that real businesses, including his, have gotten customers. What's the best way that you've gotten customers today? Let's use that as a way of promoting his Traffic Secrets podcast.
Yeah, so exactly that way. So we went online and through digital acquisition of our customers. So it's a full inbound digital marketing methodology. It's not just one way to digital advertise. So we use Google advertising, we use pay-per-click, we use all kinds of landing pages. We have blogs, SEO optimization. I mean, the entire social, so the entire digital suite is how we use to then bring customers directly to our website and then convert them through our funnels, essentially, through different workflows. And we have an inside sales team that we have, our 110 employees are all in Orlando, but everybody, it's all digital commerce. So customers come directly to us online, and we convert them to our to become a customer
through a series of email drip campaigns, right?
Emails, like all kinds of digital advertising, AdRoll.
How soon before you actually get on a call with someone?
Immediately. I think you can go on to our, you could probably do it, go sign up right now. And then within a couple of minutes, you should have a salesperson calling you. Wow. Or they better be calling. Yeah. No, we have, our conversion from our site landed from an MQL to a customer is over 10%. So we have a pretty machine running inside sales funnel. It's less than 17 day sales cycle as well.
10%.
Yeah.
Of the
it's actually 12.
Who, 12 of the people who fill in a form, not who just hit the page the way that I just did the second. They fill in a form, 12% of them buy. And part of it is that you get them on a call that fast.
We get them on a call that fast. We give them it's an incredible value proposition as well. So the product's good. We're able to demo the platform. It's super quick to understand. We save them a shit ton of money and consolidate all the tools that they're using. It's a really quick sales cycle. And the way, by the time that we get you to fill out that form, you're pretty educated. So from a, even from, most of our customers are not net new customers, net new businesses. So that's why we play in that you have to be processing at least $100,000, like I talked about. You're not a new business. You've already at least been in business for a year.
I would have thought it'd be harder to convert someone who has a business because they have to change their current current system. No,
they're coming to us because they're frustrated. They're coming to us because they need multiple solutions and it's not talking to each other. So I wish we would be the first choice that they ended up doing, but we're not. We're not their first choice. We're usually picking up all of the crap that they, like, they had a bad experience. They were burnt by their last processor.
Isn't it a pain to change tools, it? I have to go in all my different tools, I guess, and reroute the payment to you.
We have a team of integration specialists, and we usually get a customer fully up and running in a, you know, matter of same, depends on how many solutions that you have. Yep. It could be as a matter of like, here's your payment solution, here's 20 minutes and you're up, to a couple of days of like a full, you know, full integration to your full suite.
And then how do people find you? Is it paid ads and what else?
Just searching just online, right?
How has this been for you doing podcasts like mine?
You know, it's okay. I don't usually pitch on podcasts. So I'm not like usually talking about necessarily the details of Fat Merchant and the company. Usually when I'm on a podcast, it's really around my entrepreneurial story, usually around how we've been able to be successful. So I'm usually on those kind of podcasts. And so for me, thus far, I would say that it's more of brand exposure than it is customer exposure, but let's try it, right? So let your audience a code and let me see how it's going to convert. So why don't we do Mixergy as the promo code?
Okay.
And so I'll get that set up. And so if any of you guys out there listening want to sign up for Fat Merchant, get a savings analysis, kind of take a look at what our tool set looks like, let our team know, and then we'll do a code for Mixergy. And we can get you a discounted rate on processing solutions as well.
All right. I'll close out. This was all part of the ad for ClickFunnels. I'll say, if anyone out there is listening to me, you're obviously a podcast listener. If you're looking to add a new podcast to your life, just try Traffic Secrets. It's a good podcast created by a guy who's a great storyteller who has serious tactics for getting traffic. And if you're not looking for a new podcast, try it anyway, because really, you're already listening to me. You're going to be open to a brand new way of thinking about your traffic. Look at this podcast number 15. It's about how to do Facebook traffic. Podcast 14, Instagram. Podcast number 16. He's doing Google. He does even one-on-one interactions, how that can convert into customers. Go check out Traffic Secrets on your favorite podcast app.
I love that name too. It's a great name.
Traffic Secrets. What do you like about that? It's secret.
It's secret. It's like the club. Like, I want to be on the inside. Like, I want to know the secret. Don't you want to know the secret? I want to know the secret.
That's what he's doing with it. He's kind of like hitting that part of your brain that says, all right, let me see what's behind the closed door. Even despite yourself, you might want to go do it.
It's a secret.
He's all about marketing. So let's talk actually about COVID. I asked you before we got started, did you grow? Did sales grow or take a hit around COVID?
Yeah. And I feel bad answering this question because
everybody
does,
but I think it's important.
Okay. Yes. We had the highest number of sales that every month we beat last month's goals. And that's just part of the culture that we're in a high growth environment. Our goals are bigger and bigger every single month. And we surpassed April was our biggest month that we've ever had. And May is about to be as well. And so
So January was bigger than December?
Yes.
Oh, and you know what? Here's why I'm guessing. Usually, I'm imagining businesses like yours have a better December than January because they get a cut of sales. For you, it doesn't matter. You're just getting a subscription, right?
Yeah, we're a SaaS company. So we just happen to do payment. So our, like the way that we view, like all of our metrics are SaaS metrics. So we are from a net new additive standpoint. It's not a cumulative of like last month. Of course, it's going to be better than this month because we're adding last month. It's a net new sales record in terms of bookings.
Oh, and net new is even growing every month.
Net new grows every single month. I'm talking about the highest net new bookings that we've ever had.
Okay.
Which is every month we surpass the month
prior. So then why? What are you doing that's allowing you to grow so much?
Well, I think it's really, it's a whole, I mean, we talk about this for another hour in terms of growth strategies, but one, Square just a high performing team? And I think you have to have the right leaders around in your organization to kind of create that culture of a high performance culture. One of our core values of the company is called get shit done. That's a core value that we have. So we are definitely just naturally type A high performers in the company that we like to crush our goals. So that's part of it. But also we have an incredible product, and that is a necessity for businesses. And as we continue to, as more businesses are evolving, they need additional ways to accept payments. Like, this is not going away. And when I started the business, when I started in payments, I would say in the 2010, 2011, it was like 50 to 60% was credit card transactions and the rest was cash. We're a completely cashless economy now. So every business needs to have, it's a necessity to be able to have processing, but it's really around this, the platform and how they're, you know, they want analytics for their business. They want to grow their business. They want tools to be integrated into their business, like QuickBooks.
But they wanted that as much in January as they did in December. Why is it that you grew? What is it? Is it, yeah, why? Why do you think you're growing more?
Because we're high performing. I mean, we have, like, I didn't add any net new salespeople to in between then, right? So we've had the same team. We continue to optimize, like just like any great SaaS company does, we continue to optimize. We're spending dollars in the right places. And so we have a pretty large marketing budget that we, ensure that converts correctly. And so it's a whole suite of it's optimization. It's the right, the right team, it's having the right comp plan, it's having the right leaders to implement, having a team that's motivated as fuck to do it, right? Like, those are like, that's kind of, I don't know, we're fucking successful because we didn't let anything stop us, right? And even during COVID, I would say that not just from a sales standpoint, even from an innovation standpoint, the amount of products that we are like that, how we came out of COVID from really thinking about the future of commerce. We're about to launch one of like the biggest products that we've ever launched. It's coming in the next 2 weeks. And it's really around the entire contactless evolution that's about to take place in payments. Customers, we're going to pay in the easiest, simplest way possible. And business needs to be able to support that. And right now they really just don't have the ease of tools to be able to do so.
What
and
do you
so,
mean contactless? Well, yeah. What do you mean by contactless?
Yeah. So, we don't want to have to see anybody face to face. We want to take payments online. We want to take payments via text, right? Like texting. Not a lot of companies are doing text payments right now. And I think that's the absolute future. If you look at any Gen Z right now, they're never not on their phone. Look at TikTok. It's 15 seconds attention span. That's the future of where
commerce is going to go. So you're gonna let me accept payment on TikTok via text?
No, what I'm trying to say is text payment is going to be is part of what's happening to, like, it's the future. So we're launching a full contactless suite. What I was talking about TikTok was just attention span of like a Gen Z. If you look at where they're, it has to be quick. It's without humans. It's easy. Payments are embedded. Right. And so that's where I see the future of commerce going. And
are we talking about something like PayPal's PayPal.me service where I get a PayPal.me/my name and people, I can send it to people by text and then they could use that to send me money? Is that what you're talking about?
No. What I'm talking about is, let's say you're local dry cleaners right now in COVID, right? Like, you still need your services, right? So you can, go to your dry cleaners and drop off your product outside, and then they can text you that your dry cleaning is done, and then they can just send you the payment link, and you could pay all right off your phone, and you could text them, "I'm on my way," right? And then they can have your order pulled out right there, ready for you.
Got it. Okay.
So even for a small business to be able to accept payments so quickly in today's environment, like that, there's not tools out there. There's a lot of disjointed tools.
Right. I could probably put something like that together. You're saying put it all together. And are you going to do this? Are you going to do this using iMessages payment and like almost chatbot process, or are you doing it by launching a webpage?
I can't give you all my secrets, but it's coming, and look out for it on fatmerchant.com. And we'll share our contactless suite for to take all these businesses virtual.
Got it. And so you're saying contactless, not contact list. It's less contact, no connection, no
physically,
talking.
No connection, yeah. Physically. Just like even pay. When you go,
got
yeah,
it.
Like you've had Apple, you know, all these contactless payments. Like when you go to the grocery store, you can tap with your Apple Watch. You don't have to touch the physical devices anymore. Yet the percentage of contact usage today, it was like less than 3%, like of all card transactions are contactless. Now that percentage is to be on its flip side where we're not wanting to actually right. touch anything anymore. And yeah. I'm not just talking about from like an immediate post COVID. I'm looking at this from a what's next standpoint. And I'm looking towards Gen Z right now to see how they're going to be wanting to accept payments in the future. And it's all going to be integrated. It's going to be seamless off their mobile devices.
Got it. I see what you're saying. If I understand you right, though, merchants have seen a reduction in their payments since COVID from what you see, right? And we'll just close it out with this. Merchants have seen a reduction. You haven't seen a reduction because you're not taking a percentage of their sales. You're still keeping your current customers and you're adding some. That's what
absolutely.
You're seeing happen, right?
Absolutely. There was a decline of actually, it was 70% decline in transactional volume across our industry. And
70% less sales mm-hmm. being done by your customers.
Yes. Overall right. In the industry, right. overall payment industry in the United States in
and
certain
in
industry
too.
Types. Overall, our business okay. was down 40% in transactional volume decline when the industry was down 70% because
okay.
a lot of our customers are e-commerce. So we didn't see that hit that much. But point being is that there's going to be a new way when things are moving back up, even COVID or no COVID, be innovative, right? COVID or no COVID, continue to crush your goals. You know, it's tough, but, hard work is the answer.
All right. The website for anyone who wants to go check this out, what are they going to get if they go to fatmerchant.com/Mixergy?
I have to go back and figure out what you're going to get, but you're going to get probably, I'll put something together because we came up with it on the spot, at least a free month. So I'll make sure that we get at least a free month for your customers so that you guys can take a look and okay. See what we can do for you.
All right. I'm not getting a cut of it. I'm just curious to see how it works. And people, of yeah. course, if it works well for you, let me know. And if it doesn't work for you, I want to hear about that too. But I'm really fascinated by this company and I looked it up. Good ratings. It's fatmerchant.com/Mixergy. And I want to thank my two sponsors. First, if you're hosting a website, go to hostgator.com/Mixergy. And second, now that this podcast is over, go to your podcast app and sign up for Traffic Secrets Podcast. You'll love it. Thanks. Bye, everyone.